this looks like this year is going to be the last in the series that we'll have on the Yetzirah, and the last concept of what we're going to have. We're going to switch over to something different. I'm going to try to segue both what we were speaking about before with what we're going to speak about from now on. Now, when we've discussed with the Yetzirah, the different parts of the Yetzirah, we've discussed, number one, how he wants to be a part of us everywhere we go, and that anywhere we go, he wants to be in there. That's the idea of what we said with having our phones in the base medrash, brings the Yetzirah with us wherever we go. That's number one. We then said that we have to recognize the Yetzirah, know what we're good at, know what we're bad at, know what we have to work on, and what we should put secondary. Meaning, if we know what your Yetzirah is the strongest in, then we no longer have an issue of knowing what we should work on first and second, whatever. If we know ourselves, then we'll know what we should be working on. That's number two. Number three, we spoke about the three ways that the Yetzirah tries to destroy us, whether it comes intellectually, emotionally, or physically. We spoke about that medrash that's brought down regarding Avraham Avinu. And we said that we have to push past it, like a marathon runner, push past it even when it seems to be that it's very clearly against us and we have so many issues up against us. And finally, last week, we said the concept of putting forth the effort that's needed in order to make this be done correctly, even if you can't perfect it, even if you can't finish off what you're trying to do in destroying the Yetzirah, but putting forth that effort is already the first thing that you have to do, and once you put forth that effort, things end up working out in the end. Today, we're going to get into a final point which really deals with something more in Hashkafa. It deals with more of a Hashkafic type of issue that the Yetzirah might question you on. The issue really is the questions that aren't really answered. Questions that aren't really answered and that aren't really given answers to through the Torah clearly. And we're going to try to understand how to deal with those types of questions in a good manner and try to get them through. We live in a world of Hester Punim. And what that means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely hides himself and puts himself behind the scenes in order for us to live our lives. He is not Megala himself, showing himself to us at all times. Whenever you say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hey, why don't you kill that guy for going, I don't know, for running that red light? Or HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that guy was just Mechalal Shabbos. How come that guy's not dead? We don't live in a world like that. That Gibli Punim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing himself every time he needs to in order to punish, where the Dor HaMidbar had that right there in front of him, where the times of the Shoftim, where the Jews were living in such an area where when you worshipped the Avodah Zarah, you were punished immediately. That type of idea no longer is our world. It ended sometime when the first Beis Hamikdash was over, and we've never really brought it back. Even the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, there was no Gili, the same way that there was during the first Beis Hamikdash and before that. We're living in a time of Hester Panim. Hester Panim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is malim himself from us in order that we can perfect ourselves and we can bring ourselves to live without his influence. That we don't need HaKadosh Baruch Hu ruling over us and telling us what to do. We can make the decisions through his hints, and thus we can become better people. That's the entire point of it, and that's the idea. But that does mean that the world is extremely confusing, and that the Torah is very hard to understand, and when a person tries to be able to put the two together, unfortunately it doesn't always work out the same way. For example, the relationship between Yitzchak Avinu and Rivka Imenu in this week's Parsha. Looking at it from the outset, and just looking at it and saying, what in the world is going on here, can confuse a person immensely. Why in the world aren't they just explaining to each other what they hold? Yitzchak held that Esau was the greatest. Rivka Imenu held that Yaakov was the greatest. Why wouldn't they just discuss it with each other? And when you're looking at the Torah itself, it seems that this is a bad relationship. This is not a relationship that you should have with your wife. It seems one is scared of one another. It seems that there's something different, something that just kept them away from one another. And that's terrible, because that's a Hester Punim way of looking at the Torah, a way of looking at the Torah in which we're missing something, and we don't even realize what we're missing. That's the concept of what we're looking at over here. Another, the trickery of Yaakov Avinu in tricking Esau, a starving young man who's running in from the field saying, I'm starving, I need something to eat. And Yaakov Avinu goes and says, well, I'll give you some food, brother, if you sell me your Bechorah. What kind of guy would take advantage of his brother like that? He's coming and he's starving, he wants food, and you take advantage and you take something you want from him at that moment. And clearly there's a nah here, a bowl of lentils for Olam Haba. I mean, that's just not fair. Even at the time, that's not considered fair. How in the world is that considered a sale in any way, shape, or form? He even got Maris Machpelah in the deal. If you want to say, no, it's only Olam Haba, it's not a big deal. He got Maris Machpelah. Yaakov Avinu bought Maris Machpelah with the bowl of lentils. How is that fair? How is that fair in any way, shape, or form? So that's Akasha. And when you're dealing with Hester Pun, where we don't fully understand something, you look at it and you say, what's going on here? The brachos that Yitzchak Avinu gave to Yaakov, we don't even understand what that means. There's no such thing as a father in Klal Yisrael. We've never had this, of a father in Klal Yisrael getting out there and saying, all right, kids, gather together. I must give you brachos before I die. And let alone the fact that at the time, it seems that Yitzchak Avinu was only 122 years old and he lived to 180. Let alone the fact that he was 58 years away from his death. What is this concept of brachos that we have to give along? And we don't even understand what happens. In the end, Yaakov Avinu has to trick his father, gets the brachos through a Rama, and Yitzchak Avinu sits there, and Esav comes in, and he's like, who are you? He says, oh, I'm Esav. And he's like, oh, what happened? Ah, he's also Gamor Hiya. What happened? You were just tricked by Yaakov Avinu, and you're okay with it? What happened here? In a world of Hester Panim, the whole Parsha seems strange. Not just this Parsha. You look later on, all the Parshas are like this. There's confusion everywhere. Because we're not living in a world where this stuff is Megalev themselves to us. And it doesn't explain itself all. So what is the outlook? What's the way that a Jew should be able to look at this and not ask the wrong question? And I should say this better. Not ask the question in the wrong way. How could this be? How do you ask this question? How should a person do this? Let me give you an example. How old is the universe? Simple reading of the Torah, 5,773 years, and that's that. And you don't have anything. Our problem is obviously that scientist after scientist after scientist looking at the world, it's very hard to understand that. So how do you deal with a question like that? So Chazal already had an answer. It's mentioned in the Chagiga, the very beginning of the second parak. You don't ask malif min malachor, mala 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 matza. You don't ask questions of what's beyond this world, what's behind the world, what's going on before the world existed, what's going on after the world will cease to exist. We don't ask these questions. And that right there takes work. What does Chazal mean by that? There obviously is an answer. So what's the answer? What are Chazal getting at by saying don't ask any questions? Is that our religion? Our religion is just accept it, you just go forth, and there's nothing else you need to know about it? Clearly not. We let you ask questions. We have question after question after question. We're unbelievably happy when a person asks the questions and tries to figure it out on his own. So what does this mean that Chazal are saying when it comes to this, don't ask. Don't ask. Malit nim malachor mala 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 masa. What's the point in not asking these types of questions? And the answer is like this. You may be curious, and it's nice to be able to know what happened before the world, what will be afterward, because your curiosity got the better of you. If the world is really 5,773 years old, how come there are hieroglyphics? How come there are mountains that seem to take millions of years to form? How could it be this? How could it be that? And there are answers. Maybe those answers wouldn't be accepted by everybody, and people look at it and say, that's a ridiculous answer, or some people say, I don't like that answer. Maybe that's true, but there are definitely answers. But the point behind such a question is to understand something else. Knowing the answer will not change your avodas Hashem one iota from what it was before. Whatever you did in order to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu before you asked these questions will be the exact same avodas Hashem after you asked these questions and got an answer for it. Even if there was a great answer that would answer everything for you, you sit there and be like, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. What, that's going to help you put on tefillin better the next morning? That's going to help you remember to bench after you ate bread? That's going to help you remember to say a bracha every time you're thirsty and about to take a drink of water? Your avodas Hashem is separate from your curiosity. And the point is that you may be curious, but not borrowing the catchphrase of curiosity killed the cat. There's no point to your curiosity being satiated by answers if it's not going to help your avodas Hashem directly. Now, indirectly, it may help. Indirectly, knowing an answer to this question might help me out and say, well, now I have a little bit more emunah. Now I have a little bit more bitachon. Maybe now I'll be able to say, well, this is really true. Now I can go ahead and do that. Clearly, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu needed us to know the answer in order for our avodas Hashem to be perfect, it would be given to us. That answer would be given. And you'd have the answer available and it would be there. Says Chazal, knowing these answers are not going to help you. So what's the point? You want answers? Fine, I'll give you answers. It's rehearsed, there's an instinct, there's this and that and the other. I can give you answers. The Medrash Rabbah, there's another Medrash Rabbah. There's a Tanhuma that mentions something. I can give you four or five answers on the age of the universe and why it looks like it's older than what it actually is in 5,773. I can answer that, but it's not going to help. Because after you hear that answer, even if you're convinced and you sit there and you say, that's awesome, that's a great answer, that just answered up for me, I don't have any problems anymore, you're still not going to change your avodas Hashem. That's not going to help you. And the point behind what we're doing here is to work on your Avodas Hashem. Not to know answers. Although Dama Shetashiv L'Apikoros, this is still a very valid argument and something you should have. But it's to know that there's something that we need to do here and other things that don't matter when it comes to our ultimate Avoda, our ultimate service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And these things would not matter. Well, I mean, let's look at it the other way. You think it's all big ruse? You think somebody's just pulling the rug over everyone else's eyes? That all these big gedolim are all in on it? All these big gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, those ones who live in Bnei Brak in one-bedroom apartments that need paint, that they're all sitting there and they're just like, yeah, we got them. This is unbelievable. We're getting all these Jews to really believe in us, and we're getting this money from them, and we're giving it out to poor people. You really think this is like a massive trick? There's no one guy who's up there who's living in a massive palace who's sitting like, I really got all the Jews. We've never seen that. Our leaders have always been gedolim who live in the poorest shanties you've ever seen. Where you come out of their house and you're just like, he lived like that with 15 kids? How is that shaykh? That's what our gedolim have always been like. They've never been different. In very, very few instances were the gedolim of the generation, that the generation considered gedolim, were they very, very wealthy individuals. Very few instances. And in those instances, we know what they did. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi spent all of his money in order to create a seder of Mishnayos. Rabbi Ashi and Ravina put together all their money to create a seder of Gemara. We know what these people did. All the Rishonim that were able to print out their Sfarim did it that their sperm would be disseminated to the rest of the people so that they'd understand something. It's not about that. If you really think it's all a trick and we're trying to fool you and we're saying, yeah, it's just 5,773 years old and we're laughing it to the side, and there are people laughing to the side, I think that's the strangest thing of all. By far, the strangest things of all. That to say that there's something going on, that's just... to feel that there's something like that going on. So what does a Torah-sensitive Jew do when he comes up to Kushios, this stupendous... they're just beyond the ordinary type of questions. What does he do? How does he act? We have malos ne'malachor, malam malam malamata, but that's in that specific case. What do you do in other situations? We have these types of questions. They're hard to answer. So what do you do? What happens in those cases? This is where the Yetzer comes in. He screams at you, it doesn't make any sense. He's not asking you to leave the religion altogether. It's not what he's asking you. He's telling you at that moment, we are about to put tefillin on, we are about to get up to go to Mincha, he screams at you and says, do you really think the world is 5,773 years old? That's what he screams at you. And at that moment, when you're about to put on tefillin, when you're about to daven Mincha, when you're about to go sit down and learn, at that moment, that's when he nails you. And he says, don't! And that's what the Yitzhar's job is. He tries to get you at that moment, right at that second. It's not about a whole glorious thing, I'm trying to destroy you. Because we know that's ridiculous. You really think this is all a fake, that the whole thing is a fake? It's clearly not that. You think someone's wrong? Maybe there's something, I don't know, that seems hard to understand in some way, shape, or form. But he's not about destroying your whole life. That's not what he's there for. He's there for that one moment. For that one moment when you're supposed to do a mitzvah, and he's not letting you, because he looks you at that moment and says, come on, you really think Yitzchak and Rivka had a good relationship? I mean, if they didn't, you really think that we need to work on these types of things? That's what he's there for. That's what the Yitzhar is trying to get a hold of you on. It's that one little question. It's not real. Go party while you're still 20. You still have time. Go do it now, because soon things are going to get much, much harder. Go do it right now. But he's not trying to destroy your life. And that's something that a person has to learn. You have to just sit there and don't listen. Remember what the ikar is at all times. Don't get bogged down for the trees when you have an entire massive forest in front of you. Granted, there's one tree that looks strange. You have a little tree. It could be an oak tree, a pine tree, a fir tree, or whatever it is. There's a little tree inside there. But when it boils down to it, if it's just a tree and you've got a massive forest and you don't get one tree, that means nothing. And when it comes to your avoda at that moment, your avoda Hashem is working at that moment, and you're sitting there and you're saying, what do I do? Never look at the trees. Always look at the overall argument. The overall argument is, we understand that there is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that everybody here should be full in their amunah, that there is a God. And when there is one, even if I think to myself at this moment, there may be something wrong, that's a small question. In a massive forest of massive trees that are sitting down on the ground with roots all the way in and their branches reaching up to Shemayim. And at that moment, if you think that way, it's no longer a question of, maybe I don't have to go to Shacharis this morning. It's, of course I gotta go to Shacharis this morning. Because it's part of this whole system. And if that's part of the system, how could I think otherwise? Not to be bogged down by those trees. The basic amunah. of HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us Torah in Har Sinai. The basic emunah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu understanding that the Avos were absolutely perfect and that the Imos were absolutely perfect. And that, yes, they may have made mistakes. But it's not for us to judge. It's for us to read from the Torah and understand what to do with our lives based on what the Avos and the Imos did. Already tells you there's something going on behind the scenes in the Parshas. That when you see an issue with Yitzchak and Rivka, when you see an issue with Yaakov getting the brachos in a weird way, see an issue of what the heck are brachos? When you look at that, you look back inside and you say to yourself, but there's a point here, isn't there? You think the Torah would write something if it really was trying to trick you? You think it would write something that's going to make it look foolish? You think the Torah would be anything but what the Christian Bible is, which is Yashka is awesome, Yashka never did anything wrong, Yashka is great? Of course it would be that way. The fact that we're writing down something that looks like a mistake means learn from it, get something from it. Don't question the entire religion because of it. That's ridiculous. You totally missed the point of what it's there for in the first place. Again, that's the tree for the forest. That's the concept behind it. How else would that safer have gotten through? That's the concept of that. If you don't believe in this, and we're starting from a lower level, and we're starting from, well, do I really know that the Torah was given in Har Sinai? Do I really know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved in our daily lives? And that there's Hashkafa process by every person. If you really don't, if you're below that level, and you're thinking to yourself, maybe God isn't watching me at every second. Well, at that level, then you have total different questions to ask. Then you have a completely different world to ask. Then you have to start over from the beginning and say, why should I understand it this way? And then there are great svarim, there are unbelievable people, there are tremendous things to be able to get this from. But you have to start off with that basis, and I would assume that if you've come this far through your yeshiva system and you made it all the way to a base medrash, I would assume that these things are taken as obvious. If they're not, then start it now and figure out what it is. But I think I know most of you very, very well. I don't think this right there is the issue. I think it's more the trees that hit people and sit there and just say, what in the world is going on there? And remember, the Satan tries to get you emotional. The Satan tries at every moment in time to get you with that emotional argument of, no, it can't be. What do you mean it can't be? Anything can be. Anything could have happened. We're dealing with a God. We're not dealing with human characteristics. No, but that shouldn't be. What do you mean it shouldn't be? Ooh, because you don't think it should work that way? Never get involved with these emotional arguments of, I don't think so. That doesn't make any sense. Okay, it doesn't make any sense to you. Who are you? That's the concept of what the Yitzhar tries to get you on, where he sits there and he tells you, look at the world around you. Do you really think so? Do you really think so? Do you really think that's out there? Never let the emotions take over when it's an intellectual argument. Is there a God? Is there not a God? Was there Har Sinai? Was there not Har Sinai? Do we have a Torah? Do we not have a Torah? Is the Torah there in order to teach us something? Is the Torah not there in order to teach us something? Are the Avos there in order to do something or not? What am I supposed to do with my life in the morning from when I wake up in the morning and I say Modani, then wash Nevel Boxer, go to the washroom, wash my hands, go outside, make brachos, etc. throughout my entire day until I make Birkas HaMapil and Kriya Shema before I go to sleep. What is my day all about? And if your day doesn't include those things, if it's not including those things because that's just not part of me, then you've missed out on the entire point of existence. Now that's pretty sad. That's already, it's not a question of pathetic anymore. It's just a question of sad. Like, what happened? What led you to that? What happened there? It's all because you didn't ask a question, or you thought something differently, or you had, I don't know, an emotional argument with somebody once, and you just don't like those rabbis anymore. That's what happens. It's every time I get yet another person over this past week who I was told, this person is off the derech now. I'm just like, not surprised. The guy was always emotionally charged. He had issues making friends. He found his way in blog land. And once you find your way in blog land, you're able to get whatever you want. You find people that agree with you. People that don't care. People that are faceless, nameless. They don't mean anything to anybody else. So once you find your other opinions that agree with you, you're already like, see, there's like six other bloggers like me. Bloggers. They're unbelievable. Amazing people. Absolutely amazing people. Once you have that, it's just once again, if you're set and you understand what the forest is and you realize that there are trees that are issues and the trees are the issues, then it's already different. Don't let him get you down with the emotional argument. Because you know what the emotional argument is based on? Emotional argument is always based on taiva. always based on taiva. There's something that he wants. And as much as a guy was convincing me last year, convincing me, this is not an emotional argument. It's not. I have no taivas. I'm going to keep all the laws. Everything will be the same. I just don't believe in God. That guy just did something this past week that was absolutely the worst thing that a Jew could possibly do. Absolutely the worst thing he could possibly do. And you're telling me it's not a taiva? You're telling me it's not a taiva? You little liar. It's unbelievable. Absolute liar. It's not about that. I'm going to keep all the laws. I just don't believe in God. It's unreal. Because you have one tree that you have an issue with. You have one problem that's really bothering you. So you forget about everything else. Everything else that makes sense, you just go on to something else. And have fun with an argument with any of these guys. When you go up and you bring up an argument and the person says it and he listens and he hears you and he has no answer for you, but he brings up another problem. Yet another problem. But did you hear my argument? Did you hear how I just knocked you down? Did you realize that I just answered every single question you just had? But there's another problem. Okay, done. Your original question was answered. Now you want to bring up another problem, so let's discuss the other problem. But if you want to bring me from one place to the other place, remember, there's a tree. There's a tree. Just deal with the forest. That's the idea. I want to read this statement from Mr. Emilio, Revelio Dessler. I don't know exactly how to do it, so I'm probably going to paraphrase. I think that might be a little bit easier. It's in the Chelek Aleph in the fifth piece. I think it's a little bit easier to say outside. When you have questions that pierce your brain, if you're an Ish Yosher that goes in the straight path, then you'll say to yourself, I don't know. But just because I don't know, that shouldn't destroy my Emunah. The emes is, should I really be able to understand everything in the world? Should I understand every question and get it immediately? I know I'd like to, because the same way that I put something in a microwave and I expect something to come out after 30 seconds and it's nice and warm. Maybe not after 30 seconds, 3 minutes. It'll be nice and warm. I like that when I take it out of the microwave. I would expect my questions to be answered in the exact same way. Not always are you going to have it that way. Questions are just not that way, says Revelio Dessler. It's just not the same. The fact is, everything that Chazal say is MS. The fact that I don't understand it is because, number one, I don't have that great of a brain. I'm not that smart. I might think I'm that smart, but I'm really not. And I don't have the ability to understand everything that people are talking to me. A person could be talking to me in quantum physics. And I say to them, I don't know what you're talking about. That must not be true. Is that what you're going to say? No, you just have no idea because you've never done quantum physics before. You've never done it. I've never done physics before. I mean, except for here, sophomore year, which means pretty much a lot, right? But that's about it. I mean, what else do you have? So when you don't understand something, it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. When you don't understand something, it doesn't mean that forget it. Forget everything else that's said. No, it means you don't understand it, and that's okay. That means that you're going to have to work a little bit harder in order to understand it, or go on. That's a tree. You still have a forest. It's still there. You have not knocked out... I don't mean to say this in a bad way. There is no one around today that is going to be able, with one question, to knock out 3,000 years of Talmudic scholars that have been learning every day of their life. All of a sudden, you ask the question, they're just like, oh, wow, that throws off everything. Forget that, then. I'm done. It's not going to happen. No one is that smart, and no one is that dumb. No one. It's such a silly argument. Of course you have questions. And we should have questions. That doesn't bring you anywhere. It just, you have an avodas Hashem. You have a certain avodah that you have to do. Do it. And if you have questions, great. Ask them. Write them down. Write a sefer like Kushio Satsumos. Rabbi Akiva, can you imagine? There is a sefer from Rabbi Akiva Eger that's written, it's called Kushio Satsumos. Hard shilas. Hard questions. He doesn't have a single answer to any of the questions. That's the sefer. It's about 375 of them. They look great. That's the safer. It's question after question after question. I was like, yeah. Rabbi Akiva Eger all of a sudden heard that question. He's like, forget it, I'm out. I'm not learning anymore. Is that what Rabbi Akiva Eger said? No. The point is you should ask questions. It's great to ask questions. And it's okay to not always get the right answer. It's okay. It's okay. And you just sit there, and the guy tells you, well, I've got four answers to the question. You listen to all four, and you reject all four of them. It's okay, because you'll probably find an answer later on. I'm going to say this. There's a story with the Chassam Sofer and his son, where the Chassam Sofer's son asked him a certain shiloh on Chovos HaLevavos, the famous sefer, the Chovos HaLevavos. He asked him a shiloh, a major question in some type of Ashkapa. I wish I knew the question. Unfortunately, I don't. And I'm very upset that the story does not have the actual question in it. And the Chassam Sofer looked at him and said, I don't know. and his son was taken aback. Rav Avram Sofer, the Chassam Sofer, was taken aback. And 3 days later, the Chassam Sofer called him in and said, do you want the answer to your question? He said, yeah. So he told him the answer to his question, a brilliant answer, a Chassam Sofer type answer. So the Chassam Sofer looked at his father and he said, you know, I know you, Abba. I don't know if he called him Rebbe, I have no idea. Might have been Tati. So he said, I know you, Tati. I realize that you had this answer beforehand. You didn't just make this up. You had this answer 3 days ago. So why didn't you tell me? And the Chassam Sofer said, I want you to know, you're going to be a Rav someday. You're going to be a Rav of a town, and he was, the Rav of Pressburg, and you're going to be a Rosh Yeshiva. And there are going to be questions that are going to be posed to you that you're not going to have the answer to. And I wanted to see what your reaction would be. Would you bite back? Would you kick back? Would you say, forget it then, I'm not going to daven shacharit tomorrow morning, you're going to live your life. You have a question, you go on. And I saw you for 3 days, you did the exact same thing the days before that you did after that. You asked the question, you went on, you did the exact same thing, and I said, that person is Roy to get this answer. So I went that and I gave you the answer that you needed. That's the way of looking at things. The way of Rav Avram Sofer. It's to knock down your gaiva and think that everything has to go through me. If it makes sense to me, then it works. And if it doesn't make sense to me, then it doesn't work. No. No. I'm sorry. No one's that smart. And no one's that brilliant. And no one gets permission to do that. That's the way of looking at it. It's purely Yitzhahara. And that's the idea behind this. Hopefully we've learned a little bit of how to ask a question and how to not answer a question. Hopefully that's what we learned for today. We're going to go on in this subject a little bit with next week. Have a good week, everybody.